this is going to destroy the market for steel boxes.
Tournament legal, kitchen table awesome.
Welcome to the fulcrum for Brian's next bad deck.
Anybody who runs Meatstone in Legacy is A-OK in my book.
Baseball isn't still played and distributed the way Abner Doubleday said it should be.
Sometimes the wife just knows better.
I think it's a very 50-50 deck, and I'm really excited about that.
But it's not a good look for a pale, paunchy, out-of-shape gamer.
Just had the smell of defeat on it when it came home.
Oh, you brave soul. Welcome to another episode of Try Hards. We'll try to make it all the way through this podcast without being DQ'd, and while we do it, we'll talk about who wasn't at Magic's biggest stage, who didn't make it all the way till the end, whether or not Magic will make it all the way to the end for your LGS, and we'll make a few train whistle stops in between. We get it started each week with, what are you drinking? Matthew, you've been cantankerous in the dirty South. What are you drinking this week?
I've got something a little bit special. It has been raining for 4 days down here. At night, it gets a little chilly, and then during the day, it's still hot. Because of that, it's been kind of miserable, and I decided some hot tea with some Kraken rum in it. It sounds really good, so that is what I'm drinking.
Can never go wrong with the Kraken. It's starting to cool off here. Various Oktoberfests have been showing up on the shelf. One of my favorite beer styles. And I've given in. Let's see. Right now, I've got a New Glarus Oktoberfest and an Urban Chestnut Oktoberfest here. So we'll be working our way through both during this cast tonight. Brian, what do you got?
Going to stick with that theme, Sean. And sometimes the wife just knows better. I asked her, she was going into the store yesterday, and she's like, do we need any beer? And I said, of course, just get an IPA. And she comes home with Bell's Oktoberfest, and she says, this was the right choice. And I said, you're absolutely right. This was the right choice. So Bell's Oktoberfest for me.
We hope you've got something delicious in your glass as well as we dive into this week's episode of Try Hards. What Magic did you guys play? I've had the schedule pick up this week. I'm going to be honest, I didn't get to play any Magic this week. Brian, I know you've been busy. Did you get to play any Magic?
No, I loaned out Mardu Pyromancer to Eric, who's just been kind of switching up decks for FNM, and he had horrible results with it as well. So I just think that deck is, because he's a really good player. He out-junded Nash in one match, so I was happy to hear that. It just had the smell of defeat on it when it came home, or the smell of victory, I should say. So Nash, hey, good job losing to my deck. I touched all my cardboard this weekend, guys, because I was cleaning up the basement and preparations for the move whenever that happens. So God, I went through so many sleeves and cards and just tried to put them in spots. So didn't actually get to play Magic, but boy, did I touch some cardboard this weekend.
A friend of mine that just had a baby, actually, he turned 6 weeks today, messaged everyone and said, hey, Thursday night, he was going to be up at the shop. I made it work because I hadn't seen him pretty much for about a month, did a chaos draft, and it was complete and utter nonsense. Nothing really special to report there, but I did. That was the only actual cardboard I touched. We had plans all weekend. Three of the plans were outdoor related. And as I mentioned earlier, it's been pouring down rain. So because of that, our plans got canceled. Since our plans got canceled, basically I had almost all day Saturday just to kind of do laundry, do what I wanted. So I ended up testing out a bug deck for Modern. Waiting on the new set to drop for sure, but it's got some really good legs to it. And I have to give a shout out to Saint Doom on Reddit. He basically designed the deck. I used it as a starting point, and we had some good discussions on Discord as well about where to move forward. So I'm hoping to actually stream with him and have him tell me how terrible I'm playing, and then also have a big giant stream sometime in October. Everyone locally is going to tell me how terrible I am.
What has drawn you to this bug deck? Is it because of Assassin's Trophy, or do you feel like there's just synergy with all the other cards?
So Assassin's Trophy is a big one for sure. On the flip side of that, I think that this particular deck just has a lot of different play to it than some of the other decks in the format. Because of that, it's really drawn me to it, and it's one of the biggest, I would say, 50-50 decks in the format. The negative on the deck is that it doesn't have any come from behind. I top deck this, I kind of like auto win, but every single calculated decision in the deck it really gives you a good leg up within the format. And so that's why I'm like, yeah, I think this might be good one. And I've definitely got to do some testing with Assassin's Trophy, but I want to get a lot of input from you guys. I want to get the local guys over to my house, and I'll set up a big stream room, probably in the living room, and then they can yell at me and watch me play all day and say, you know, tell me how terrible I am, stream with some other people. I just think it's a very 50-50 deck, and I'm really excited about that.
Well, the Louisville community and St. Doom, you're going to be welcomed into a rather large fraternity of people who just deride Matt and tell him he's making bad decisions during his stream. Yeah. So
I really want a lot of user input on this, and I want this to be like our legacy GP that we all went to and really prepare for it.
Two notes on that. One, we failed miserably with that project. And two, crowdsourcing your decisions, not always the best way to go.
Sean, obviously, our input was not welcomed, you know, we put in for Declan.
He's so doing this.
Maybe Hurley needs to go out to the masses in order to feel love.
Yes, I 100% agree with that. There is somebody who's going to feel the love, though, and it's this week's winner of our TryHards Patreon raffle. We've got another pack of the sweet GP lands that we picked up at GP Minneapolis, and we'd like to make them yours. If you're a TryHard Patreon of the $5 or more tier, you have a chance to pick this up. Matthew tells me we have 43 eligibles for the raffle this week. He has the list. I have the TryHards randomizer. Here we go, and it is, number 8, Matt, number 8.
Dan Fournier, I believe his last name is. I know he's won once or twice before. Congratulations, Dan. You've been with us now for, it looks like, about 6 months.
Dan, thank you so much for your support. Appreciate it. Our winner this week for our Patreon Try Hard Raffle. One event that was going on that had a little higher EV this weekend than our Patreon raffle. It was the World Championship. There were 24 players invited. 23 of them decided to show up. We'll get to that math and why it doesn't quite make sense in a minute. It was held in Vegas, Dominaria Draft, and Current Standard. That means pre-rotation standard. We also had a pick'em last week. Brian went with Luis Salvato, great choice, on a heater at the end of the year, possible player of the year. Matt had Ben Stark, that was pretty good. I went with Gregor Kowalski. And the Polish Punisher brought it home for Sean, finishing with 33 points. He was a finalist at the World Championship. All he had to do was beat Ben Stark in order to get there. So I watched that match kind of nail-biting the whole way. Matt, that was an absolutely fantastic pick of Ben Stark on your behalf. Brian's Luis Salvato had 18 points. It is a killer field. Guys, was there anything you learned from watching your players play or watching this unfold? Javier Dominguez was the eventual championship. He defeated Kowalski. Both were on red-black aggro for standard. Dominguez won it in 5, and congratulations. Not only did Dominguez run it back after losing the finals last year to Huey Jensen, but he becomes Spain's first world championship. Now, his weapon of choice, as I mentioned, as well as Kowalski's black-red aggro. 13 of the 23 players who played registered black-red aggro for their deck of choice. 3 of the 4 copies in the semifinals, in the final 4, were black-red aggro. Only Shahar Shenhar brought something else in blue-white God's Pharaoh's gift. Was this interesting to you to watch all of the intricate red-black aggro decisions? Or were you hoping for a little bit more varied field when it came to standard?
The latter. The red-black decision-making is... Yeah. I feel like we've been watching this for 18 months, and we have. It's the same kind of decisions that we've been seeing for quite some time. I don't know. It lost a lot of its attractiveness to me once we realized that 75% of the top 4 was going to be just red-black aggro. The blue-white God Pharaoh's gift is such a fun deck, and it's such a great deck to see in action. But just the power of red-black aggro is so high that you know why everybody's playing it. It's just, I was a little surprised not to see a little bit more of a varied standard field. Hurley, did you have that same reaction, or was I just kind of missing the boat on this? I thought things had leveled out a little bit more than what we saw.
I did not watch a lot of it, selfishly, partly because I just thought it was boring, to be completely honest. This is something we've had for this standard format and something we had forever, partly because of the mysterious 24th player that was not showing up. So I did not watch a lot of it, but I did see all the results and everything, and I'm really not surprised one bit.
I'm a little bit surprised. You have professional players at this level who like to have a longer decision tree with more decision points in a game. I was shocked that there wasn't one deck that leveraged the power of Seal Away, Glimmer of Genius, Settle the Wreckage,
Teferi,
Gear Hulk, Torrential Gear Hulk, the Scarab God. You know, are all these things too slow now? And some of them are not to be seen in Standard anymore with rotation coming up. Ken Yukihiro, the guy who registered the mono blue aggro deck, didn't actually get to see his tournament out to the end. He was DQ'd in round 14 when he drew a Diamond Mare. This is a common card for these decks, but it was a sideboard Diamond Mare. He drew it in game one, did not self-report it to the judge. That's a bad move at a tournament of this caliber. They have a judge assigned to each match, and they are paying attention. The judge noticed that he didn't self-report his sideboard Diamond Mare in game one, and that was the end of Yukihiro's tournament. And this world championship has just been fraught with drama that wasn't on the playing table.
Yeah. So there's a little more to that story than just that.
Like, he just skipped a draw step, right?
No, he didn't even report it. He drew the card, played through his turn, and then reported to the judge. The judge gave him an automatic DQ for not reporting it immediately, which I think is absolutely asinine. Because if I draw a card, I say, judge, I got a sideboard card in here, I believe you get a game loss. I believe it's a warning, in fact, at that level. I think it's a warning, and they burn that card. But regardless, it's not a DQ.
I thought that was a little harsh, but I think it's you would agree, though, that when you draw that card, you absolutely know it's a sideboard card. So why didn't he just throw his hand up there at the moment?
My thought on it is upgrade it, because even an upgrade would have been a match loss at worst. You're playing in World. You draw the card, you play through. How quickly is your brain going to click to say, oh, that's a sideboard card? I probably would have done the same exact thing, to be completely honest. And not on purpose, more so that, wait, I have this Diamond Mare. I probably would have been thinking through it. Part of it was there was a language barrier there as well, because there was something about he accepted it without appealing it and then tried to appeal later. This has all been already confirmed by Wizards, but he appealed after he accepted the tournament DQ, and they said that it was too late to, since he had already accepted his punishment, it was too late to actually appeal. Think with having one cheater in the midst there, like just blatant cheater that probably shouldn't have been in Worlds, I think they're being extra careful because the community was watching and because the community is very unhappy about that person who was there who has a history of cheating.
Matt, I'll agree with you that there could be some language barrier issues here. But you know what there is no barrier on? Raising your hand and identifying with the judge. But he should have been taking the initiative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that 100%.
Even an upgrade, and if he had moved a full turn cycle and then said, hey, I have this sideboard card. If he had done that, I would say, whatever, DQ the guy because he's obviously trying to play it off or something. But upgrade it. Don't just auto-DQ him. That's at least two levels above what the penalty should have been.
Well, we'll see how this continues to play out, as Wizards is obviously very sensitive to the allegations that are going around in the community right now. And whether it was handled through a translator or was a little bit stiffer than usual, Ken Yukihiro paid the price for it with his DQ in round 14. That left us with, on the official tournament reports, 22 players. Because when you're DQ'd, they remove you. But you're saying, Sean, wait a minute. There were 24 players at this event. There were 24 players invited to the event. The event actually started with 23. Matt, you were the first one to jump on this. Where was Jerry Thompson?
Jerry Thompson was sitting in his hotel room. He messaged the tournament organizer, which was a Wizards employee, approximately an hour beforehand and said, I am not playing because I don't agree with the way that pros are treated and the way that pros are marketed. essentially this is Pay the Pros version 2.0. I 100% agree with him. I mean, he made an extensive listing on Reddit explaining what he was doing, why he was doing it, and how things can change. One of his biggest complaints, you know, everyone says, oh, you know, they're putting this pro tour, whatever you want to call it, the Pro Tour Advisory Committee together. One of his biggest complaints is that, especially after Pay the Pros, which was 2.5 years ago, something like that, they've done these types of things before just behind the scenes. They said, oh, yeah, we hear this, and they haven't changed a thing. I 100% agree. This game everyone loves, but you can't, even on the Pro Tour, you can't make a living. And if your excuse is, well, this is a children's card game, you shouldn't be making a living on it, I hate to break it to you, but there's lots of people making livings, not just with this card game, but through vendors, but with Fortnite and all these other video games that, you know what I hate to say to you, are children's video games. That's not an excuse. That's not the thing. And I 100% agree with Jerry. And frankly, after the other actions I've seen Wizards do on their Friday dump, I'm not confident that Wizards will properly come up with a compensation package for the pros that is amenable. And I also don't think that they will ever market their people correctly. I'm just not sure where to go from here. I mean, I'm just at a loss, to be completely honest.
Jerry put up a Reddit post about what he was thinking and made all of his points. Jerry also has his own podcast, the Game Podcast, which is excellent in its own right. You can check it out there. We'll have a link in the show notes to his Reddit. It would be a monstrous show to go through point by point with the detail that he's bringing up and try and discuss those topics. So we'll let Jerry continue to expand and expound upon those points he's bringing up. It was just unfortunate that we lost the opportunity to see one of the great players in our game of Magic not take the highest stage in the game. There were other players on other great stages, though, including SCG Baltimore, gentlemen. That's right. Legacy was back in the spotlight. 437 players for the Legacy main event. Matthew Vuk on Four Color Loam knocked off Jonathan Rossum on Grixis Control. Brian, Grixis Control still really the deck of choice in Legacy. It and Dimir Shadow, which Grixis Shadow has just jettisoned the red now that everyone's on the reanimate plan, each had 14 copies in day two. No other deck had more than 2 copies in day two. Golgari Depths seems like it's continuing a rising trend. And then there was the deck that I want to talk to you about in length. Mono Blue Painter. You've been on this. You've done a little testing. What do you think about what we're seeing from this Legacy result in Baltimore? And are you ready to put Antiquities War in your painter list?
Oh, man. I was so happy when you texted me that because I was so busy this weekend. I didn't have a chance to see it. I had heard like whisperings, and I thought I misheard something when someone was like, oh, Mono Blue Painter. And I was like, that can't be. Somebody's not playing that at SCG. And sure enough, Brian Durkin is playing Mono Blue Painter. This deck is quite a little bit different than the version I'm playing. Mine has a lot of permission in it. This deck is a version that's a lot more aggressive than the version I'm playing. This one leans a lot on Psymaster, Thopterist, and on the Antiquities War. Mine leans a lot on War of Invention to kind of end of turn, convoke some artifacts, get some things into play. The Antiquities War version, what I'm seeing here is he's loading up his deck not only with 4 Ancient Tomb, 3 City of Traders, kind of what you would expect out of maybe a Sneak and Show deck. Also, Aether Spellbomb, Chrome Mox, Mox Opal, the Meek Stone, Tormod's Crypt, just to try to make all of your artifacts live as 5/5 creatures if you can get the Antiquities War to stick around to the third saga. I really like this direction. This seems really, really aggressive because once your opponent kind of sees Antiquities War hits the table and you've got all these little 1 or 0, you know, casting cost artifacts, you're thinking, oh, I could be in for a world of hurt here. So you've got to really be proactive. Mine is a lot more of a reactive deck. Get the Painter and the Grindstone combo onto the battlefield, maybe at end of turn with War of Invention, protect it with some counter spells, some Fluster Storms, slam it back to basics to try to lock your opponent out, that kind of thing. So I really love this idea. I'm curious to see if this is what we've seen before in Modern and Legacy, just kind of a one-off. But the Psymaster Thopterist is a definite upgrade. The Trinket Mage, I think, is fantastic. the seat of the synod, having four of those is just another artifact sink, is phenomenal. So really, really good job on kind of deck design here. Hurley, did you see this in action? I have yet to go back and watch it in play, but I'm really interested in kind of this whole combo format of, you know, milling somebody out with Painter's Grindstone, obviously. Is this maybe the deck that I should look for, or maybe just kind of go the route that I've been on for a while?
I love this deck. I did get to watch this. This is what I watched over the weekend. The only, I guess, confusing part to me was really, this is going to sound odd, was the Mox Opals. When you look at the list, you question yourself, am I needing this mana turn one? Am I getting this mana turn one? He never seemed to need it or miss it when he did need it. And the reason I say the Mox Opals, because you're really only looking at about 14, I think it is, artifacts, maybe 16 with your land, something in that range. And that's just not a very high artifact count to get Mox Opal online. It's a zero drop that triggers Psy. Absolutely applaud the seven soul lands as well. That's really, really cool. Brian, were you running soul lands in your version?
I'm not running any City of Traders, but I'm running three Ancient Tomb.
Okay.
And it's basically, I'm running Island and Ancient Tomb is my only ones. He's got four Darkslick Shores in there, just to give another Sunburst color for Engineered Explosives, I'm guessing, along with his Mox Opals. I don't think there's any other black in there for that. But yeah, the three City of Traders, I think, is a really interesting take on this. It's a lot more aggressive, like I said, than the one I'm building. This has like zero permission except for four forces and then one Flusterstorm out of the board.
The deck looks masterfully crafted, but that Mox Opal is just, as strange as it sounds, as super powerful as it is, just is the one that I kind of like look at it and I'm like, ooh, that could lead to really bad draws where you can't do anything. Granted, you can cast it three times for Psy, but then you have to already have a Psy out, not have your hand picked apart. Anybody who runs Meekstone in Legacy is A-okay in my book. I'm not sure if the two of you were with me when I was walking the halls of a SCG. I think it was Indianapolis maybe 7 years ago, something like that, 6 years ago. I was looking for Meekstone for my, I think it was my Mud deck or my Painter Grindstone deck. I'm not sure which one. Everyone was laughing at me and they're like, you're dumb. I was just 8 years ahead of my time, I guess.
Is this list now the better Tesserator list? Because with the addition of Psy Master Thopteris, and I think the Opals are just there as a combo turn with Psy, because they're zero drops. And then once you have the free Thopter tokens, they make the extra mana and they kind of take the place of the standard version as the statuary, quote unquote, in that spot, and you can get more out of it than you can with Mox Amber. So I think that's your combo turn. Or does this deck need to stretch a little bit to accommodate Tezzeret, your best Planeswalker of all time?
In Brian's version, I think Tezzeret is amazing. In this version, I'm not sure, and that's only because I'm really not sure if it's too slow, if four mana is too slow for this deck.
They're playing Antiquities War. That's also, is that taking the spot of the Tezzeret?
Maybe. I think so.
I definitely think so. I absolutely think the Antiquities War is taking that spot because you are digging for, you know, top five twice in a row, revealing an artifact card. I think that's just unbelievable off Antiquities War. And when it gets to that third lore counter on that saga, all of your artifacts are 5/5, so whatever Psy's been doing, if you haven't been sacking artifacts to draw cards with it, your Meekstone's a 5/5, your Opals are 5/5s. That's why I think those zero ones are in there. I really do. The Chrome Moxes and the Mox Opals suddenly becoming 5/5s as an alternate win condition, I think, is just a little too devastating for most decks to overcome.
Part of my questioning on that Mox Opal as well, The accepted levels of where you have to be for Mox Opal, the accepted number of blue cards you have to be for Force of Will. And I think that's just kind of old habits, die hard type of thing. So, you know, I'm 100% behind, if it works, do it. Yeah, this deck is masterfully crafted.
It should be a lot of fun going forward. Although it should be noted that all of those sweet permanents die to Assassin's Trophy. So maybe he just hit it on the one
can't
weekend.
Play any permanents at all now.
No,
they all
it's
going to
be Storm only from here on out in
Oops,
any format.
All spells. There we go.
Yep, that's right. Get your Bolstrade Spies now. Anything that Assassin's Trophy is legal in, going to be only spell-based. Wizards will have shot themselves in the foot if that's the way the format actually goes. We hope you enjoyed your tournaments this weekend. Tournaments next weekend, well, just pre-release. Get out, have some fun. I think Loading Ready Run has already done their pre-release, so you can check that out. They're always a good time. Before we get off the tournament topic, though, guys, we would be remiss if we didn't at least mention this. The Team Series title went down at the World Championships as well. Congratulations to Team Ultimate Guard Pro. They are made up of the Peach Garden Oath and Andrew Cuneo and a bunch of other fantastic players. They knocked off Hariruya Latin in Team Sealed, and they took a page from Matt's idea. They used the upcoming Guilds of Ravnica. Matt, when you found this out, that the Team Series tournament was being contested on a forward block, they had forward momentum, while the World Championship was using the old, quote-unquote, dead format of current standard as well as Dominaria, were you looking to throw something through a window, maybe set something on fire? What was your immediate reaction? Because I know you had one.
My immediate reaction was, oh, this would have been nice to watch 5 hours ago because I have to click on 7 links to even find the world's results and the world's information on their websites. So my immediate reaction was I didn't know it was happening, because I wasn't immediately watching the Worlds, but I would have tuned in had I known it was happening. And then it was a little bit of, you know what? This would have been great as the format, and you probably would have boosted numbers a lot.
Brian, you've been hard at work securing 3 more players so that the tryhards can form a pro team for next year, correct?
Yes, of course.
All right, we'll see if we can get in and face down Ultimate Guard Pro. Something tells me we'd be a little out of our depth in a showdown there. On that
they'd show up stage. Drunk with a ham sandwich and beat us.
If they show up drunk with a ham sandwich and I'm playing Mono Blue Painter, I think we have a chance, guys.
Well, the problem is we need somebody else to win a game, and I don't know if any of your teammates could support you.
No.
At that point, that brings us up to this week's news. MTG Portal, the official companion app for mobile for Magic, is not ready yet, guys. This was released by Wizards. They were hoping to launch the closed beta by the time Guilds of Ravnica came out. So this is essentially what the takeaway was. The ads for MTG Portal are still in the Guilds of Ravnica product, so just ignore those when you open them, whether it's during pre-release or release weekend. There was some other news with the Wizards Online apps. Arena is right now, as we record, offline. It is going to be back up and running for the open live beta on Thursday, September 27th. They plan no more wipes from that point going forward. So this should be interesting to see how this all starts coming together. I'm looking forward to it. Had fun testing in the closed beta. Think it should be pretty sweet going forward. Experimentation. It's a word that invites a cornucopia of meanings. Depending on who you talk to and what you talk about, it could lead you down some dangerous paths. The path Wizards chose was deemed to be so dangerous that no one signed their name to the article. That should have been your first tip-off when it just says WotC staff. In my previous life, as someone who was tertiarily involved in politics, this was a familiar sight. A Friday 4 p.m. Eastern time document or news dump so that no one was available to take your questions or calls until at least next Monday. This is something that Wizards has adopted, and I think for the worse. Guys, this experimentation article boiled down to 2 points. Let's start with the one that isn't going to provoke that much adverse reaction. There will be Guilds of Ravnica Mythic Editions available to be purchased at GPs this year. Okay, we can all take that in stride and move on. The second, and what has caused the community to lose some of its collective hair, Wizards, and I'm paraphrasing here, Wizards has apparently formalized its agreement to retail with Amazon. Matt, you have been hot on the Magic Finance Trail for many a year now. Why is this a bad thing for Magic?
Some people listening to the cast may not know some of my background. I do actively sell on Amazon. I don't sell a lot in part of their Fulfilled by Amazon third-party program. And I don't sell Magic stuff on there. It's other stuff. What this program is you ship in your products pre-labeled. Amazon does all the logistics. Somebody orders something, and if you order something off Amazon, it'll say fulfilled by, and I'll have the business name there, and they'll ship it direct out from their warehouse. Reason this is important, you get those items immediately through Prime, Amazon Prime, which has, you know, millions and millions of members. My big question here is, why would they do this? Amazon does not typically honor. Now, maybe if Hasbro came in and said, here's how you have to do it. Minimum acceptable pricing. You can't sell lower than this price. Today, you know what boxes were on Amazon this morning? $88.34. $88.34. Most stores buy their boxes high 70s. That means that no store can profitably sell on Amazon. Most stores sell their boxes for anywhere from $100 to $120. Why would I buy from a local LGS if I can buy, get them next day or 2 days off Amazon? Also, the people that are selling their boxes online, they just got completely priced out. As of recording, the prices on this is $94.85. Local store sells for $100. My only bonus is really the card, that buy a box card that you're not going to get through here. They do have the pre-order guarantee on this as well, which means if there's ever a price decrease between when it ships and now, you get that lower price. This is going to destroy the market for sealed boxes. Yes, it gets to casual players easier, but they should have said your minimum acceptable pricing is $120, because this essentially resets the MSRP on boxes. The vast majority of stores, Sean, probably the local one you have, probably sells, I think they were selling the boxes at $120, $110. He'll never sell another full box. He'll barely be able to draft. Stores don't make a lot of money off the boxes, but it does get them the order value from their distributor, so they get better pricing. And some of the smaller stores that ordered a lot would sell online. They'd sell on Amazon TCG player. Cannot do that anymore because they can't compete with this. I can tell you from fees, I'll give you the exact amount right now. If I was selling a box on Amazon right now, I would have to buy it after fees, and I have some of the best fees. I'd have to buy it at approximately $68 before fees and everything to break even at $94, and that's including freight and everything else. This might be the worst decision that Wizards has ever made, and I think this is indicative of a semi, I wouldn't call it a cash grab, but of Hasbro coming in and not understanding the market, because I do think this is going to drive LGSs out of business over the long run.
Okay, I got a couple of points here. Number one, Amazon is wielding enough clout that I don't think they've ever had to respect a suggested retail price. So assuming that Hasbro can step in and get them to do that here, I think is a bit of a pipe dream. Let me play devil's advocate right now, and you can feel free to jump on me. I'm Wizards of the Coast. I closed my official WotC stores quite some time ago. I'm not in the business of running LGSs. I'm in the business of selling Magic the Gathering. If you opened up a store in which your only or vast majority of your business is Magic and Magic-related products, why'd you take that chance in the first place? Shouldn't you be diversified? Why do people expect to be able to carve out a living based solely on being the middleman for one singular item? That's what I don't get. I mean, my family owned a comic and game store when I was younger, Comics and More in Kirkwood, outside of St. Louis. Granted, this was before the magic boom. It was the mid and late 80s and very, very, very early 90s. We were diversified. We did a bunch of different things with it. Why is Wizards being condemned as the devil for seeking a better outlet for their product? That's what I don't get.
Let me jump in on this. Because, Sean, I think you're asking the right question. And, you know, is Wizards supposed to be taking as much heat as they're getting for this? And I think the response is yes and no. And let me start with the no. No, because they are in the business of increasing their stock price. They had the turnover with the CEO. The guy came from Microsoft. The whole corporate structure is kind of in place, and I think we're now seeing what's happening. So, yes, WotC is beholden to its stock prices. It's beholden to its shareholders. At the same time, Wizards cannot deny that this game was started by Richard Garfield. It has only gotten them to where they are today through the loyalty of the stores that have sold this product, and sometimes, yes, solely this product, from 1994 on all the way up through 2018. It has, have most of those stores diversified over the years? Sure. A lot of them have sold board games. They've sold comics. They've done miniatures. You name it. We've all been to those kind of stores for various tournaments and whatever. There's always a group of people playing D&D or Warhammer, something else happening in those gaming communities, but it's the central hub of that world. And I think for WotC to just kind of ignore that and say, we're going to set the big dogs of Amazon and have our LGSs try to compete with that, I think is being a little obtuse and just kind of ignoring the reality of how the game has become what it's meant to so many people.
I guess my answers to those, I have really easy answers, is a city like Louisville, you have enough people here to diversify within a lot of different places. You're going to have a store. Once you get to a city like Quincy or Galesburg, the question becomes, who's going to run tournaments? Who's going to run PPTQs? Who's going to run pre-releases? Yes, these weren't money makers for the stores. And I spoke a little bit incorrectly earlier. It was actually $78. I said $68, but $78 is where you need to be at to sell at current Amazon prices. Who's going to run these tournaments? Who's going to build the community? Because there's a lot of people, a lot of casuals out there that will buy a box from the local store, and then that's when they buy their sleeve. So maybe they spend $200. They spend $110 on a box, but they spend $200 total because they get a few singles. It's going to crush that sealed market, and the price is going to go so low that the imprint sets are going to be heavily bought. It's going to increase that portion of it, the money for WotC, but going to decrease long-run sales for the game, and I think that that's ultimately a huge net negative for the game as a whole. So the question is, like you said, Brian, who's going to run all these tournaments? Who's going to do this with LNGS? I can't go. I'm stealing somebody's words here, and if you know who it is, you can tell who I've been listening to today, but am I going to go to Amazon's warehouse and plan a pre-release, buy soda and buy sleeves and support my local community? Am I going to buy singles from there? It's just not happening. And if they would have came in and said, hey, here's the minimum acceptable price, there is contracts they can sign with Amazon to do that, Amazon still would have snapped it up, because MTG is consistently the number one seller. I really think this was one of the worst decisions that they could have made, and they need to fix it rather quickly.
I guess I'm just surprised at the righteous indignation. Nobody is crying over the fact that baseball isn't still played and distributed the way Abner Doubleday said it should be. No one's upset that basketball still isn't played on peach baskets, because that's the way Dr. Naismith said it should be. No one cares that Kansas doesn't get a dollar out of every pack or doesn't set the minimum standard pricing for basketballs. This is a big-time market. It's a big-time company with huge corporate growth, with investors, with other things. Can Magic players just not handle the fact that this isn't a grassroots game anymore? And if you believe Wizards, that the vast majority of their money comes from casuals who don't play tournaments, why should they make a decision based on where we play tournaments? Trying to play devil's advocate here to understand the outrage over this, because it's only people that I hear from the quote-unquote enfranchised community, which are your retailers, which are your podcasters, that seem to have this opinion. I asked a couple of people who play exceedingly casually about it over the weekend, and they said, what? We just kind of get stuff, you know, wherever. Like, they don't care.
I think part of it is that's the problem. It's the same people who never think about where they buy anything. It's the people who are only going to shop at big box stores because that's where they can get the cheapest price. It's not understanding local economies and understanding that small businesses need our dollar, even if you're going to spend a little bit more out of pocket. What you're doing is basically what we try to do on a regular basis of building that community. Building a Magic community, getting more people in the game. We're not getting a paycheck from WotC. we're getting nothing for that. We're just trying to spread kind of the goodwill because the game has been so good to us and we take pleasure and satisfaction out of playing this game. You know, it's kind of an altruistic idea. In the same way, we want WotC as a business to kind of have some of those altruistic ideas. And Sean, you're right. They have nothing. They don't owe us anything for that. But I just wish that before making this decision, they would have put a little bit more thought into it and given the LGSs at least a bone to compete with some of the Amazon people saying, hey, we're never going to be able to put you out of business. We will always give you discounted pricing if you're at a certain status, something like that. I feel like it could have been handled a little different. I don't have all of the answers, obviously, nor do I have the righteous indignation that you're talking about. But I do agree with Hurley that this was a poor decision. I'm very curious to talk to Michael down at the local shop and see what he says and if he has any light to shed on this, just because I think the retailers are going to start feeling this soon. I hope that those in the community will still be loyal to their LGSs as long as, you know, they're not having to spend another $25, $30 a box, which would be a little outrageous. I would tell anybody, hey, I understand loyalty only goes so far when it comes to pricing.
We'll see how this goes. Some would make the argument that you're actually getting your money back, depending on how good the Buy a Box promo is. Nexus of Fate, it's been a $20 to $25 card. Impervious Great Worm is going to be the next one. Will it be that good? Probably not, but we'll see where that goes. And what Magic contends with is the fallout from the, quote, experimentation article brings down on him. Well, there's one experiment that's still ongoing, and he wasn't smart enough to remove his name from the byline in case it blows up in his face. Yeah, it's the guy who runs our financial elevator every week. Matt, I hope you polished your shield, because just one glance from her and this whole thing could be turned to stone.
My pick here is Vraska Relic Seeker. I am super high on Ixalan cards moving forward in New Standard. And this card is currently only about a little under $9. This being able to just destroy any artifact, creature, and enchantment, I think enchantment's going to be a key one there because there is going to be some running around. I think it's going to be fantastic. Pick some of these up now because this is, I think, easy $15 card, especially with the quality of planeswalkers we have coming out. I'd say under $9, pick these up.
Vraska in the elevator this week here on Tryhards. That brings us up to this week's 3 minutes to brew. Well, we've finally taken the gloves off Brian. We're allowing him to look forward to Guilds of Ravnica. Brian, what do you got for us?
I've got a card that I feel like we could brew with every week because it could probably just be so versatile in so many kind of decks. And I know that there's already a few pros, Jerry T included, who are pretty high on this card. So I don't want to jump on any bandwagons and form a runaway train or anything. I feel like this is a card that I'm very curious to get both of your takes on. So the card I'm talking about, if you haven't guessed already, Runaway Steamkin. This is a 1/1 creature elemental red for one red and one other. Whenever you cast a red spell, if Runaway Steamkin has fewer than 3 1/1 counters on it, put a 1/1 counter on Runaway Steamkin. Remove 3 from Runaway Steamkin and add 3 red mana to your mana pool. Sean, I'm going to start with you. I feel like the versatility here is just going to have pros salivating because of all of the different tricks that you can do, especially with an aggro color like red. Are you with me that this is something that they can brew with in maybe all 3 formats?
I don't know what to make of this. It's certainly not going to replace Bomat Courier in an aggro deck in Standard. Is the ability to earn a ritual later after you've played your 3 spells that interesting? I just don't know that it is. If this was put, you know, an exceeding number of counters on Steamkin, and then for each increment of 3, add this on your upkeep, and then it got to keep the counters and continually grew and became, it's almost like a living carpet of flowers, I think that would be fantastic. And it's something that's vulnerable enough when you put it down. There's plenty of removal. I don't think it would be too good. Seal Away is still going to be in the format, and it has to tap to attack. So I don't think it would have been that overpowered to let this thing continue to keep growing. As it is, I just don't see it repaying you for the investment you need up front. And this card kind of feels like a trap to me.
Yeah, that's fair. Hurley, what about you? Are you high on this card at all, or do you see it very limited in scope?
I'm with Sean. I can't decide. I feel like it's good, but I also feel like it could be a massive trap. My one caveat to that is there's got to be a card somewhere within the modern format that says something like, when you cast a spell, put X11 counters on it or something on a creature, something like that, where you can artificially put 11 counters on there and essentially go off. I don't know where that is, and I don't know what the deck will look like, but I do think that having a 1-1 for 2 in the late game is really bad. Just like that card that Jerry T took to a pro tour. You can exile a spell on the stack and then it gets +1/+1 or something like that. I think that was a trap as well. And so I'm not super high on this card, only to be cautious. And it's definitely money-wise not worth the $3 or $4 it's at right now.
I think both of your true colors are showing, gentlemen, that you're just not seeing the future here. I think Runaway Steamkin is such a good card, and because I think it's going to pair very, very well with another card from Guilds of Ravnica, and that is Risk Factor, which we touched on last week a little bit. So imagine this. You've got your Steamkin that you can swing in for, let's say, 4, okay, because you've got 3 1-1 counters on it. If your opponent wants to take 4, fantastic. You can still remove the 3 1-1 counters from it after combat and cast Risk Factor. It may deal 4 damage to them. If you don't, you draw 3 cards. In which case, you could start this kind of cycle all over again. I understand that that's not going to happen all the time. But there's other cards that I think, Hurley, that these are the ones you're looking for. Monastery Swift Spear in Modern. You've got Adelise the Cinderwind. You've got some of the other Prowess cards. You've got so many different things to do with red mana, especially 3 red mana. I could see the Blue-Red Storm deck possibly using this in some way, shape, or form just to accelerate themselves, especially since the Baralls and the Goblin Electromancers makes that casting cost of those cards so much less. I just feel like there's enough power here that someone is going to be brewing something with it. Whether or not it's going to be tournament legal, kitchen table awesome, who knows? But I still think there's something to be done here, and so that's why I'm pretty high on Runaway Steamkin. I hope someone runs away with a victory at pre-release, and please hit us up on Twitter or on the Patreon page if you do.
Welcome to the fulcrum for Brian's next bad deck.
Yeah, no kidding.
This week,
I can't wait to have the worst deck in the room and have a ball doing it.
This week's 3 minutes to brew Runaway Steamkin here on Tryhards. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. I am going to wrap mine around a thank you, a big thank you that I have for a man who is a 2-time Magic World Champion. And if you know anything about the history of the game, you already know who I'm talking about, because there's only one of those. Thank you to Shahar Shenhar for taking his Sunday appearance at least seriously and looking like someone who is ready to play a game for a large sum of money who was on the line. I'm not saying that you have to wear a suit every time you go to a big tournament, but even we like to get dressed up for Legacy here on Tryhards. And the man took it seriously. Look, it's just not a good look. And I am all in favor of sponsorships and advertising, but it's not a good look for a pale, paunchy, out of shape gamer to plaster a silk jersey across his body with an oversized logo on it. Find some other way. Take a page out of the poker book and find some other way to put your logo on your merchandise to display either your sponsor or your team or what have you. Thank you to Shahar Shenhar for representing the game in a much more mature fashion for his Sunday appearance. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic?
Let me just say, Sean, I was watching a little bit of coverage, and even Megan walked by and was like, "Ooh, who's that?" And I was like, "Yeah, just go away." Because he looked darn sharp. But man, the size of that watch on that left wrist, holy moly, that had to have been catching some glare at some point. What I did to get better at Magic this week was relish in the fact that someone else in the universe is playing Mono Blue Painter. Sean, thank you for the text informing me of this. I love the fact that people just try off-the-wall things. I think this is a continuation of the kind of decks that are catching on, you know, every now and then. The Jeskai Helm decks in Legacy, the Mono Blue Painter decks, people who come up with some crazy stuff, a Mono Red Storm variant that I've seen show up on a couple of things. These are the kinds of things that keep this game so interesting and why it's so much fun to keep playing, because there's always brew space available. And in the formats like Legacy and Modern, where everything is so wide open, I feel like you can do that and not be kind of laughed out of the room, a la Hurley when he's looking around the show floor for Meekstone 7 years ago at the SCG event.
I'm just ahead of my time.
You're just ahead of your time, exactly. We've said it for years, for sure. You know, pretty soon everyone's going to have a rabbit as a pet. I'm just saying that as well. Keep brewing. Keep coming up with those crazy ideas. That's the only way you're going to push the envelope and get better at this game.
Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic?
So I typically make fun of this area, and that is what I usually call the armpit of the internet, and that's Reddit. Really appreciate all of, I posted the deck list, and there was actually a lot of constructive criticism on there. It made me look in a lot of different directions for cards and made me learn how to play the game a little bit better as well. So thank you for not trolling the crap out of me, every single person on Reddit. I look forward to working with a lot. I've been communicating with several people, and I look forward to working with all of them on my Modern deck, which will be posted up very shortly.
Oh, you brave soul. Thanks for jumping in while we work through some of our issues on this week's episode of Try Hards. Your reward next week? Well, we're going to go off the deep end. With it being pre-release weekend, we're going to say goodbye to some of the cards we'll miss when Standard rotates, and good riddance to the cards that outlive the time we would have liked to have seen them. And oh yeah, there's another B&R announcement we might have to deal with coming up next Monday. We'll cover it all for you right here on Try Hards.